documentation critical and scientifically oriented ufologists, 14s and investigators of paranormal phenomena face the dilemma of finding a tenable and relevant theory, worldview or paradigm integrating all these diverse phenomena. Entering this realm becomes an intellectual challenge as the paradigm market presents a plethora of conflicting views and statements. But the existential implications of the unexplained phenomena forces the scholarly and open-minded investigator to question mainstream science and philosophy. Journalist and 14 John Keel expressed this challenge in his classic Operation Trojan Horse, 1970. I tried to adopt a very scientific approach to ufology, and this meant that I scoffed at the many contactee reports. But as my experiences mounted and investigations broadened, I rapidly changed my views. I have dealt with thousands of honest, sincere witnesses by mail, phone, and in person. My skepticism has melted away, and I have turned from science to philosophy in my search for the elusive truth. The investigator of edge or borderland science becomes an intellectual and cultural heretic and outsider as mainstream academic science is dominated by the reductionist and materialist paradigm, which automatically discards anything challenging this basic worldview. There are, of course, a few brave academic scholars openly advocating a different view. Drive Jocelyn Godwin at Colgate University, New York, and Dr. Jeffrey Kripal at Rice University, Houston, Texas are excellent open-minded culture radicals in this respect. My personal 45-plus years in borderland research has also included dealing with the existential aspect of UFO and paranormal phenomena. With my academic background in history of religions and philosophy, this was inevitable. I entered an arduous intellectual journey with many ups and downs, including temporary stops at various metaphysical groups, secular humanism and skepticism. In 1997 I became fed up with all the irrational and inhuman nonsense I had encountered in the UFO and New Age movement and longed for the clear light of reason and common sense. The result became 6 years active involvement in the secular humanist movement, in Sweden represented by Humanisterna. For several years I was elected vice chairman and in 2003 editor of the magazine Humanisten. After some ideological conflicts, I left the organization in 2004. One of the issues I published in 2003 is editor of Humanisten. In many respects, I still regard myself as a humanist, sharing several of the objects and views of the organization, such as the importance of secularism, the fight for human rights, women's rights, and opposition to religious fundamentalism. The secular humanist movement has many praiseworthy ideas and projects and is an important voice in today's world threatened by religious fanaticism and intolerance. Unfortunately, most humanists are hard-line materialists and reductionists with very little knowledge of phenomena and experiences that challenge this worldview. They sometimes appear as the reverse side of naive New Age activists, confidently proclaiming the truth with no empirical data and research. They share this problem with the skeptical movement, in Sweden represented by the organization Vetenskap och Folkbildning, VOF. There are, of course, skeptics of all kinds. A critical but open-minded attitude is a necessary intellectual tool when investigating UFO and paranormal phenomena. A detailed examination of skeptical internet sites and magazines reveal the fact that you will never find documentation of UFO or paranormal phenomena that remain unexplained. Skeptics are very anxious to print cases that have been solved by UFO, Sweden field investigators, but you will never read about the unsolved cases. This is scientific and intellectual dishonesty. In UFO Sweden publications you will find both the unexplained cases and those that have been solved and identified. This Alan Hayek quote is very appropriate here: if you know the answer beforehand, it isn't research. Still, there are open-minded skeptics who are doing some good research and also support a few. Our foremost donor Hillary Evans was such a skeptic. Neither reductionist materialism nor orthodox religion has any tenable answers when faced with UFO and paranormal phenomena, which clearly indicate a multiverse reality. If there is a Multiverse inhabited by various sentient beings of different evolution and intelligence. There must also be a science of the multiverse, which implies that it is reasonable to assume the existence of scientists of the multiverse or custodians of knowledge not discovered by mainstream science. This is the position maintained by the esoteric tradition or the ancient wisdom. I have found the esoteric worldview formulated by A.O. Helena Blavatsky, Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence the intellectually most interesting alternative paradigm to be used as a working hypothesis when dealing with UFO and paranormal phenomena. It represents a third-way worldview between materialism or religion. What often makes me hesitant to use the label esotericist are the many cults and irrational personalities claiming to represent esotericism. There is also the problem of right-wing extremists and neo-Nazis who use and promote esoteric ideas to attract recruits. There are unfortunately potential dangers in advocating esotericism in our socially and politically unstable and troubled times. Perhaps it was with ideas like that in mind that made the adept K.H. remarked in a letter to Alfred Percy Sinnett, "Modern science is our best ally." The Mahatma Letters to A.P. Sinnett, Letter 13. By advocating esotericism as a valid paradigm and working hypothesis in UFO and paranormal research, I become something of a heretic among heretics. To be intellectually honest, I must of course admit that I may be wrong. Only time and further research will tell. I believe Jacques Vallée expressed the central issue of our pursuit very well in Forbidden Science 2. The history of ufology should be placed within an esoteric context. The UFO problem, the question of parapsychology, are central to this business. Looking for the solution isn't just a scientific project, it's a quest, an initiation, an enigma like that of the Sphinx. p. 211. Esotericism and the intellectual humanist. After a lifetime of travel, field investigation and study of UFO, phenomena and paranormal phenomena, American journalist John A. Keel reached the conclusion shared by many researchers into these areas: we live in a multiverse inhabited by a variety of diverse intelligences. In his last book, The Eighth Tower, 1975, he wrote, "Today many scientific disciplines are moving in the same direction, not realizing they are mapping a very old country. In a few years, perhaps even in our own lifetime, all sciences will suddenly converge at a single point, and the mysteries of the superspectrum will unravel in our hands." John Keel's prophetic assertion comes to my mind when I study the new books by academic physicists and astronomers postulating a multiverse. One of these academics is Swedish-American cosmologist Max Tegmark, professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and also scientific director of Foundational Questions Institute. His latest book, Our Mathematical Universe, has recently been published in a Swedish edition, Vårt Matematiska Universum. The multiverse theory is today presented from different scientific disciplines: physics, astronomy, psychology, parapsychology, and since the 1970s it has been a prominent hypothesis among ufologists and fortiens, John A. Keel, Jacques Vallée, Alan Hayek. This is an interesting cultural phenomenon. A sort of re-enchantment of the world advocated by scientists and scholars, instead of disenchantment, to use the terminology of sociologist Max Weber. But as John Keel so aptly remarked, this is mapping a very old country. A country for centuries studied in the esoteric tradition. Academic and scholarly interest in this heretic and forbidden science has seen a remarkable renaissance during the last decades. It has been realized that the esoteric tradition can be regarded as the third intellectual force or pillar in cultural history alongside religion and science. Esotericism as a serious academic pursuit must of course adhere to strictly empirical research, and the attitude of methodological agnosticism argued by Wouter J. Heyngruoff, professor of history of Hermetic philosophy and related currents at Amsterdam University. But no academic student can work totally free of any basic paradigm or worldview. An interesting problem of scientific credibility is to what extent can an academic scholar of esotericism also be an advocate of the esoteric tradition? the field investigator of UFO, 14 and paranormal phenomena who after years of study and with a mass of empirical data realizes that the reductionist, materialist worldview is untenable and a paradigm or theory encompassing a multiverse must be formulated, face the dilemma of finding a reasonable and intellectually acceptable alternative working hypothesis. I have for some years in my blog and latest book argued that the esoteric tradition as formulated Helena P. Blavatsky, Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence constitutes the best and most interesting multiverse paradigm and theory to explain the multitude of intriguing phenomena documented by many researchers. The perhaps most difficult question to answer is, can a critical, scientifically minded researcher and intellectual humanist accept a controversial worldview like esotericism as a working hypothesis? What are the problems and dangers? My answer to the first question is that I have found esotericism, especially as presented by Bailey and Lawrence, of such intellectual and humanist quality that they are worthy of consideration both as a worldview and ethical compass. Of special importance is that Bailey and Lawrence also have solved the basic epistemological problem of how to intellectually relate to the claims in esotericism. Here two quotes of relevance: reasons for the appearance of phenomena are being everywhere sought, and societies are formed for their investigation and demonstration. Three types of people will respond to this book. They are, 1. Those open-minded investigators who are willing to accept its fundamentals as a working hypothesis. They will be frankly agnostic, but willing temporarily, in their search for truth, to try out the methods and follow the suggestions laid down for their consideration. Our attitude should be that of reasonable inquiry and our interest that of the investigating philosopher, willing to accept an hypothesis on the basis of its possibility, but being unwilling to acknowledge as proven truth anything until we know it for and in ourselves. Alice Bailey, A Treatise of White Magic, 1971 ed. pp. 6, 32. To scientists without experience of other worlds than a physical, hylozoics can, of course, be only a working hypothesis. A working hypothesis acceptable to those philosophers and scientists of the future who will seek for a tenable worldview and life view, realizing that there must be superphysical worlds and kingdoms. Henry T. Lawrence, The Way of Man, 1988, online ed. pp. 5, 40. Even if by thorough study you are however much convinced that the hylozoic system agrees with reality, yet you must view it as a working hypothesis. This principled attitude is necessary to avoid all manifestations of dogmatism, fanaticism, and intolerance. Henry T. Lawrence, Knowledge of Life 4, 1995, online ed. p. 29-30. Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence constantly in their works reiterate the necessity of treating the esoteric worldview as a working hypothesis and the only tenable scientific and intellectual attitude to the presented claims. A problem on a different level are all the odd and naive believers and sects who claim to be exponents of the esoteric tradition but simply present a sad travesty of esotericism. In this group we also find the more potentially dangerous groups using esoteric ideas to promote various ringed, wing or neo-Nazi ideologies. This aspect of esotericism has been thoroughly documented by the late academic scholar Nicholas Goodrick, Clark in Black Sunday Aryan Cults, Esoteric Nazism and the Politics of Identity, 2002. From a Swedish perspective this problem is of special significance, as the publisher of the Henry T. Lawrence books, Lars Adelskog, unfortunately combines his publishing venture with political right-wing activism, Holocaust revisionism, anti-feminism and the anti-modernist ideas of traditionalism. Ideas which are anathema to the spirit of the esoteric tradition and must in today's unstable and troubled world be regarded as potentially a threat to democracy, freedom and human rights. Politically the esoteric tradition has more of left-wing ideas which I have noted in several blog entries. An esotericist who clearly understood that the esoteric tradition was basically politically left-wing was Riley Crabb, Director of Borderland Sciences Research Foundation 1958-1985. He devoted many articles in the Journal of Borderland Research to explain this political dimension to esotericism, which of course rendered him many enemies. Riley Crabb, 1913-1994. I view the esoteric tradition as an enlarged or deeper form of humanism. This must be obvious to anyone reading the books by Alice Bailey, amanuensis for the Tibetan. The student is constantly reminded to strive for the good, the true and the beautiful. Something sorely needed on this interplanetary Alcatraz. For the active field investigator of UFO, Fortean and paranormal phenomena looking for a working hypothesis or paradigm, I present the answer given to me by the British esotericist and ufologist T. Brian Edmond in 1976. Basically, I am agnostic, but I accept theosophy provisionally because it answers more questions in a logical and scientific way than any other religion or philosophy that I know of. Paranormal phenomena and the esoteric paradigm. Recently I discovered a very interesting article, Visions of the Impossible, published in the Chronicle of Higher Education. It was written by Jeffrey J. Kripal, professor of religious studies at Rice University, Houston, Texas. He is, in my view, one of the most fascinating religious scholars and intellectuals of today. Take a look at the very extensive collection of articles and other data on his homepage at Rice University. I first discovered the writings of Jeffrey J. Kripal when reading Authors of the Impossible, The Paranormal and the Sacred, 2010. One of the few books written by an academic scholar giving accurate and open-minded presentation of the research and ideas of Charles Fort and Jacques Vallée. A sequel was Mutants and Mystics. Science Fiction, Superhero Comics and the Paranormal, 2011. Visions of the Impossible challenges the materialist and reductionist worldview so prevalent among mainstream intellectuals and academia, and the taboo of taking paranormal experiences seriously or relating personal observations of an unexplained nature. Many scholars are simply afraid that serious interest in or mentioning personal paranormal experiences may damage their academic image and career. Kripal presents scathing criticism and funny remarks about the present flatland models of human nature. We are constantly reminded that we are basically walking corpses with computers on top, in effect, technological zombies, moist robots, meat puppets. We have conscious intellectuals telling us that consciousness does not really exist as such. The many and varied paranormal experiences, and I would add some UFO observations to the list, simply has no place in a materialist worldview. So official and the mainstream science simply ignores all the reports or regard them as mere anecdotes and misidentifications. Kripal has a different view. I suggest a way out of our present impasse. We should put these extreme narratives, these impossible stories, in the middle of our academic table. I would also like to make a wager, here and now, that once we put these currently rejected forms of knowledge on our academic table, things that were once impossible to imagine will soon become possible not only to imagine but also to think, theorize, and even test. Such a bold and heretic suggestion was of course met with severe criticism and many examples of invectives from the hardline skeptics and materialists. In his sequel article Embracing the Unexplained, Kripal answers some of his critics. Somehow, in roughly the same period, I managed to be an offense to both materialist ideologues and fundamentalist censors. The materialists painted me as a science-bashing religionist, while the fundamentalists portrayed me as a religion-bashing pervert and reductive materialist. Further discussion of how to intellectually handle paranormal phenomena is presented in Seriously Strange. Thinking Anew About Psychical Experiences, a collection of essays edited by Sudha Kakkar and Jeffrey J. Kripal, 2012. Paranormal phenomena cannot be fit into the reigning models of science or orthodox religion, but instead of being brushed aside as insignificant or delusional, they should be seriously studied. Kripal, it thus cries out to be interpreted, to be theorized, to be incorporated into new forms of knowledge and human possibility. When you, like Kripal, have discovered, by personal experience and extensive research, that paranormal phenomena are real and that there is a ghost in the machine, that consciousness is more than simple brain activity. You face the real challenge of trying to find a paradigm or working hypothesis that incorporates this new form of knowledge. Like myself, many researchers and scholars have found the esoteric tradition or ancient wisdom to be the intellectually most interesting and challenging alternative worldview. In the academic world, there has also been a remarkable renaissance and renewed interest in Western esotericism, which can now be studied at the universities in Paris, Amsterdam, and Exeter. This indicates a slow but culturally significant paradigm shift from materialist reductionism to a new science of the multiverse. The fascinating iconoclast journalist and Fortean John Keel came to the same conclusion after a lifetime of investigating unexplained phenomena. In his last book, The Eighth Tower, 1975, he concluded, "Today many scientific disciplines are moving in the same direction, not realizing they are mapping a very old country. In a few years, perhaps even in our own lifetime, all sciences will suddenly converge at a single point, and the mysteries of the superspectrum will unravel in our hands. We will finally understand, truly understand, the forces that have directed our destinies throughout history." p. 216. Basically, the esoteric tradition says that we live in a multiverse, inhabited by many, by present-day science, unknown forms of life. And if there is a multiverse, there must of necessity be a science of the multiverse, as exact as any academic discipline. There. Challenging corollary to this idea is that then there must somewhere exist scientists of the multiverse. It is this idea that has been made into something of a travesty by many cults and sects. But suppose that behind all the nonsensical popular occultism there really are a group of adept scientists of the multiverse. This is indicated in the more academic presentations of the esoteric tradition by authors like Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence. Bailey gives this illustration: "They will stand forth as living examples of goodwill, of true love, of intelligent applied wisdom, of high good nature and humor, and of normalcy. They may indeed be so normal that recognition of what they are may escape notice." Bailey, The Externalization of the Hierarchy, p. 699. Serious interest in the esoteric tradition is growing, both among academic scholars and the public. I notice this at my daily work as librarian at Norrköping Public Library. So last week I wrote a short article on esotericism for the library homepage and built a small exhibition of books relating to this theme. The cultural elite will probably regard the ideas as heretic. And so they are and have always been, a challenge to both materialist science and orthodox religion. Christina, Queen of Sweden and Esotericism. One of my responsibilities at Norrköping Public Library is arranging academic lectures, inviting Swedish scholars and authors engaged in current cultural and scientific debate. On March 19 I had the pleasure of introducing Susanna Ackerman, PhD historian of ideas and an expert on Hermeticism and Rosicrucianism. She is the author of Rose Cross Over the Baltic: The Spread of Rosicrucianism in Northern Europe, Brill, 1998. Susanna is librarian at the Swedenborg Library, Stockholm. Her latest book, Fenixlten: Drottning Kristina som Alchemist, The Phoenix Fire, Queen Christina as Alchemist, was also the theme of her lecture in Norrköping. The Swedish Queen Christina, 1626-1689, created quite a scandal when she abdicated her throne and converted to Roman Catholicism in 1654. She spent her later years in Rome. There has been endless speculation and many theories as to her motives for the conversion. In her new book, Susanna Ackerman argues that the real reason for Christina's conversion was her deep interest in alchemy and the Hermetic tradition. She was an avid collector of esoterica and created a large library in Rome on these subjects. Susanna Ackerman lecturing at Norrköping Public Library. Susanna Ackerman has done some groundbreaking and innovative research and presents new data on an old enigma. Surprisingly, there has been no reviews of Fenixlten in Swedish media. assume the Swedish media elite and mainstream intellectuals don't know how to handle the rather iconoclastic theory presented by the author. To review a book like this, you must be something of a scholar on esoteric traditions. When reading Fenixlton, I immediately associated the ideas with the classic Giordano Bruno and the Hermetic Tradition, 1964, by Frances Yates. She asserted that Giordano Bruno was burned at the stake in 1600, not because of his astronomical theories but as a result of his espousing of the Hermetic philosophy. The last decades has seen a remarkable renaissance for the scholarly interest in esoteric traditions. The subject is not taboo among academics as it was some years ago. Susanna Ackerman's book is an example of this growing interest, and I hope the next step will be a doctoral thesis on the theosophical movement in Sweden and its cultural influence. The Swedish King Oscar II, 1829-1907, was strongly influenced by theosophy and invited both Henry Steenlokot and Annie Besant for audiences at the Royal Castle. There is a treasure trove of interesting data to be found in research on this forgotten aspect of history. Traditionalism and UFOs. The amount of books published today with a UFO theme is staggering, and it is almost impossible to keep abreast with all new titles, even for a librarian. I was made aware of this situation when Swedish poet, author and left-wing political activist Muhammad Omar told me of a fascinating book published already in 2005, which I had obviously missed. The title is Cracks in the Great Wall: The UFO Phenomenon and Traditional Metaphysics, written by American poet and author Charles Upton, an adherent of the traditionalist school which has its origin in the French philosopher and mystic René Guénon, 1886-1951. Traditionalism or perennialism is a metaphysical school that, somewhat surprisingly, during the last decades, has attracted many scholars and intellectuals despite its basically anti-modernist, radically conservative, pessimistic and gloomy philosophy. In several ways it represents a variation of the Back to religion movement, but with a mystical outlook, much in common with Hindu Advaita subjectivism. Judging from the book by Charles Upton, when it comes to assessing the UFO phenomenon, traditionalists end up in the same camp as fundamentalist Christians and anthroposophists: UFOs are demons, forerunners of the Antichrist. Here are a few relevant quotes. The UFO phenomenon constitutes a true postmodern demonology. The UFO phenomenon is perhaps the most sinister complex of beliefs and events to be found among those loosely associated with the New Age. Aliens are members of the Jinn. Father Seraphim Rose, an American, born Eastern Orthodox priest who died in 1982, gives perhaps the best explanation of the UFO phenomenon that we possess. Simply speaking, they are demons. The present UFO manifestations are here to prepare us for the religion of the Antichrist. A degenerate taste bespeaks a wounded soul, either traumatized, and so in need of healing, or deliberately depraved, and so headed for the wrath of God. I only pray that my own decision to write on the subject of UFOs does not indicate the beginnings of a similar depravity in me. Reading Cracks in the Great Wall, ufologists immediately recognize the dark apocalyptic ideas and visions propounded by former Flying Saucer Review editor Gordon Grayton. He was influenced by Rudolf Steiner's anthroposophy and regarded UFO entities as manifestations of the demonic Ahriman, a view obviously shared by many anthroposophists. A classic example is Flying Saucers: Physical and Spiritual Aspects by Dr. Georg Unger, published already in 1958. René Guénon was a spiritual seeker involved in many of the Fnde Cycle occult underground movements in Paris, including theosophy. Born a Catholic, he later converted to Islam, initiated to Sufism in 1910 by the Swedish painter and author Ivan Ageli. In two of his books, Theosophy, History of a Pseudo-Religion and The Spiritist Fallacy, Guénon criticized theosophy and spiritualism as dangerous and actually satanic counter-initiatic movements. Behind all these movements, theosophy, spiritualism, HB, is there not something more fearsome, of which their leaders perhaps do not themselves know, and of which they are in their own turn merely the instruments? Guénon, Theosophy, 2004, p. 272. Although traditionalism or perennialism is often referred to as esoteric, it has very little in common with the esoteric tradition of Blavatsky, Bailey or Lawrence. Traditionalism is a form of mysticism which becomes very obvious in its simplistic interpretation of the UFO phenomenon and related entities.